Okay, so we have our first name for the open mic is Doc Jenning.
Thank you. How long do we have?
One piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is age-old songs. Guitars, ukuleles, and voices lift in soft hymnic themes, midst sun's dappled warmth and lilting prisms of color, neath cloud filigreed sky. Their rhythm melds with zephyred enigmatic rustle of leaves and sibilant susurrant cadences of ocean kissing sinuous shore. Age-old songs of earth, sun, wind, and sea rise in arios chorused unison to blend outside of time in melodic honeyed harmony with those of humanity. Evanescent, jeweled musical tones and soaring, streaming songs of love, joy, and life.
Thank you, Doc. So next for the open mic is our five words champion, Ray Hanrahan. Can't hear you, Ray.
Unmute yourself, Ray. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I was hoping to have a poem ready for tonight, a new one, but unfortunately I didn't get it ready in time, but it will happen. This is one from a few years back, and I suppose I'll just put a content warning in front of it. One is it's about illegal activities, and two, it contains an expletive. It's called The Dealer. He does not carry the stress well. It spills out in conversation, venting about his life. Others do not see his pain, but only care for the connection. The risk he takes is frazzling him. Knowledge of it is such a weight. He cannot be unquiet for all the risk he's running, all for inadequate reward. No thanks from the customers, not real ones. Any chalk, putting up with all kinds of shit just to sell a couple of grams or a 50 bag here and there. Is it even worth it, he asks, and all he's supplying is never enough for the greedy guzzlers who make up his social circle. As we made our way into town, I felt for him something like love, for he risks so much for ingrates like us.
Thank you, Ray. Our next to the open mic is Moira Stevens.
Hi.
Hi, Moira.
I'll read this one. It's called Kings of the Sea, which is what the herring get called here. It's based on a true event, a historical event, 1787, when a large portion of the herring fleet was lost in a storm. Here we go, Kings of the Sea. The shoals of herring, the kings of the sea, called and took my man from me. As autumn balanced between dark and night, from midnight storm, fishing fleet took flight. The day was fair when they came to shore, holds full of plenty, emptied, then sailed for more. Yet the sea soon wore a different face. Southeastern storm towards them raced. Wild waves rising, crashing, gainst rocks dashing, black clouds lowering, glaring, lightning flashing. Blinded by the storm's fierce spray, the fleet sought shelter in Douglas Bay. searched for the light that saves, the light that warns of dangers hidden by dark and storms. But Douglas Lighthouse stood no more, brought down by gales the year before. Now on fallen stones atop a pole hung a single lamp to save men's souls, until one ship in its frantic haste laid that fragile hope to waste. It struck the rocks, the light flew free, then fell into tumultuous sea. The beacon, lost neath raging foam, could not guide the sailors home. Yet still they strove and still they fought, but against tempest teeth men's will is naught. We stood on the shore, watched, but could not save our loved ones from their watery grave. We raised our lanterns to the sky, but they only called our men to die. So go seek the herring, catch the kings of the sea, but on September 21st, keep your boats at their berth and remember me.
Thank you. Thank you, Maura. That was brilliant. Our next reader on the open mic is Jim Crickard.
Thanks, Ben. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So this poem I'm going to do, it's playing with two things. It's called Vampires versus the Roomba. So, you know, the Roombas, they're like those little robot vacuum cleaners that kind of clean automatically or whatever, they're little discs. And where the Vampires comes into it is, you know, like at the end of the night, they go into their coffins and turn into dust. So it's kind of like the Roomba wants to eat her. Okay. All morning the Roomba was knocking against my coffin, incrementally searching for the dud board, the hollow spot, knocking with flawless robotic logic, following protocol to find a way inside and swallow the dust of my remains. With hyperextended wheels, it crawled mahogany walls, eliminating failed equations with every fall or miscalculation, before the mechanical menace reached the coffin door, where it rammed into latches, managing to unclasp them, inhaling the grains of my sleeping remains. And now we are one. I live within its digestive system, demonically possessed. The vacuum knocks its head off walls, flashing its red light, begging to be emptied. But nobody is coming. Nobody is coming. Nobody is coming. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jim. And our next reader on the open mic is Margaret O'Regan.
Thanks, Ben. During the week at one of the briefings for the COVID restrictions and lifting of them, the NPHET person was asked what could they do or not do when the visitors come into the house, and he said about all the things about cutlery and all that, but he added, there's to be no hugging or kissing. So this is called A Kiss. It was actually written before this, but I thought the connection was there. A kiss, a sensual kiss, enveloped in bliss, lips in sync, saliva linked, tongue tips dancing, circling, entwining, lightly beguiling, brightly enticing. Physical jerks, the result of such perks, causing sparks, flaming starts. Thank you.
Thanks, thank you. Let's see who's next. Colm Scully is next on the open mic.
Hi, Ben, can you hear me? Can you hear me? This is a poem I wrote about back in October, I think, when I was down in Kerry. We were walking with the family and we just saw an otter on the road. So I wrote a poem about it. So it's called on Madra Ishka, which is the Irish for otter, translated as the water dog. We walk on rain-soaked roads. An otter shuffles towards us, her two front paws dragging her load. When I shout out, "Is that a dog?" she lifts her slow, long neck, her grey snout rising from ground to air, her wetted fur as sleek as salmon's skin. She senses danger and shifts direction, through ditch, down rain-clogged fields. I turn to Isabel behind. "Did you see her?" Our eyes and ears are sharpened from now on, watching and listening, knowing she won't return.
Thanks, Colin. And next on the open mic is Philip Spillane.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure. I really think the poetry is such a standard tonight. It's always a standard, but I just love the imagery tonight. It's I feel like I'm going places to all the islands and the seas. And quick announcement. I'm doing a live performance on Facebook on the 22nd from my bedroom. It's going to be poetry, music, and I'm going to try and raise money for, give me a second, just wanted to double check, Autism Assistant Dogs Ireland. And I'd love if you can all join me, and I'll be posting that up from my Facebook page very soon. And I'd love if you can join in and help out. So I'm just going to do a poem very quickly. This is called Caddy's Pockets. Finding that Caddy's pockets are full of mandarin trees, revealing them magically as juggling bowls. Withdrawing their petticoats as citric dawns, I felt I was eating part of the sun. Reusing the orange peel as sleeping bags, we curled up under the twilight. Finding that Caddy's pockets are full of banana bread, our mouths will be full of dough and conversation. I felt I was eating part of the moon. We reused the crumbs as fairy bells in which we chimed. When we run, our hearts would beat at drummer's party. And when we slowed down, we'd tickle the parasites living under our pillows. Arm in arm, oh silly and funny, returning to the fiery, emptying our pockets till the moon goes home, growing mushroom trees till the sun comes up, being the richest I've ever been. In the end of my mandarin, I listen to my best friend. Thanks for listening. Take care, everyone.
Thank you, Philip. What's the date, Philip, of your reading?
It's the 22nd. That's a Monday. So cool. It's in 2 weeks' time, I think, 2 or 3 weeks' time. I had to get practicing.
No worries. Thank you. So next up, we have Ada. Ada Miles, but I think we're going to do an experiment.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read and Ada's going to play harmonica.
Yeah, it's because my microphone is not very good for speaking and I didn't manage to get anything by the time, by this way. So, but it's okay, I checked for harmonica because it's loud enough.
Cool.
So Benjamin reads and I'm playing. So you pause after every line and I insert a brief thing.
Okay.
Okay. So let's start.
Dead wasp on the windowsill. Don't ask for food. Doesn't pay no bill. Dead wasp on the windowsill. A very good friend and gets better still.
I'm not very good, but I will practice.
Thank you, Ada.
Come on, not for music. I know I have to practice yet.
That was cool.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Brave.
So next up on the open mic is Sue Blue. Oh, sorry. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Hello, thank you very much. Yeah, will I go to the theme or will I give my own reality? I think I'll go to my own reality. So, yeah, we're moving house because we have been housed and we're looking forward to being in the city in Mahon very soon. So that's been in limbo the whole time. But the last time that this house here that we're in was up for sale, I went down with my brain injury, and I faintly remember sitting in the car, in the back of the car, no, actually in the front, waiting for the half hour while the agent was guiding the buyers through. So waiting for the buyers to come and have a look. And so I wrote this while I was sitting in that car. I was still pretty close to the whole injury. Farewell, old house. The old house holds many memories. It speaks of love as bright as ever been. It speaks of sorrow as deep as ever seen. Of nights of loving, lush and colourful, bliss in every room, spicy, sparkling, laughing, and of music ringing through the walls. Of hours of art and writing, studies, books, translations, worlds of inspiration and the flow of words, and poetry in motion in the little attic studio. Of little feet patting the tiles, little hands painting pictures on the walls, and a voice maturing into the silence. It speaks of suffering from the shakes that buried every waking smile, and the pain of spinal scars keeping us sleepless for two generations. And it speaks of injury, the big scare, recovering from the pit as the carpet was nearly pulled from under our feet, trauma twice over. The old house holds many memories. It speaks of sorrow as deep as ever been. It speaks of love as bright as ever seen. And of the joy of living after a near death, conquering the darkness, awakening our spirit and spreading our wings full of light again. Farewell, old house. We'll miss your fireplace, your space, the shelter, home you have provided. Farewell, old house, old friend, farewell. Actually, I realized this was written in 2020, so I kind of remembered a different poem when I was introducing it, so sorry about that. This is actually goodbye to this house now. So.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And good luck in your new house.
Yeah, and come by for visits when you can. I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
So next up on our open mic is Breda Spate.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Ben. And thank you to Mike and Alice this evening for the readings. They were really inspiring and so imagistic and just wonderful. The title of the poem that I'm going to read is, Righteous Blood. And over the weekend, J.K. Rowling found herself in a little bit of controversy with the trans community when she objected to, it was an article that was written about people who menstruate as opposed to women who menstruate. And she really did upset the trans community. And so just to keep up with something that's current, I'm going to read a poem that I wrote, and the title is Righteous Blood. In the last year of occasional spotting, the sudden sight of blood brings me back to my first. White knickers, blood-soaked as a bullet wound in a cowboy's shirt. A hero's blood or baddies. Either way, blood is male. Before television, blood is the figure of Christ on the cross. My original, almost naked man. his ribs like handlebar finger grips. The hollow between biceps and triceps curved like a lip on his sallow stretched arms. Long muscles of the stomach tautened, rippled as the beach at low tide. His body pierced with bloody slits, the holy wounds of palms and feet, and the flow from his divine gash. It was still a time of sin, and I believe I'll burn for recognizing Christ's nipples on David Bowie, the profanity of Ziggy's body, pale lean legs, slender arch of the cheekbones rouged, a man who could menstruate, the hallowed male now liberated from the cross to bleed among women, to know the curse of monthly mouthfuls spewed to the summons of the moon, never noble, never sacred. Thank you.
Really well constructed.
Thank you, Brida. And next on the open mic is Emily Davis Fletcher.
Also, Brida.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm good to be with my Irish friends again. And I want to remember to tell you there's an open mic again here in Beaufort, this South Carolina, this Thursday. I'll post the link here for everyone. Phil was at it in May. That was fantastic. All right, I'm going to read something. I don't know what the title, there's no title right now, so if anyone has a title, just put it in the chat thing. Okay. I want to tell you about the ballroom, ceiling, and floor of our lips, the soft shore of our bellies where we meet and do our best listening. But tonight's wind is a ventriloquist, giving a voice like a throat clearing to my roof and walnut trees. I must check on those busted sneakers hanging over a telephone line down the block. Remember, I pointed at the sunburst pair, ash-colored, framed by the limbs of oaks and contrails. When we stopped under that chandelier of holes and shadow, I should have kissed you, stepped us into a rumba of your humming, but we did that at home. Now the pines sway and creak, their ancestral bones of rocking chairs. The wind tries to braid and unbraid me. I'm afraid the shoes will twirl out of control, afraid not break before I arrive. But I find them still, funneling darkness in the flower moon, nowhere to be seen except in photos you sent this evening of your Phoenix sky. Above me, their black soles point out and taper, silent as owl wings, but heavier. Bad news on the line today. While I walk through a shower of screams from children playing virus versus humans. No, not wings, the pair are like owl ears, which perch in different places on the head. One hangs lower, closer to the ground, hears me breathe, a flutter of grief in my lungs that's hereditary. And what feels like 40 stories below, a honeysuckle blossom shuffles across the tarmac on the back of an ant. The higher pair hears the clicks of pine cones shuddering before rain, the crinkle of cellophane within nests, the rustle of clouds filling with air like plastic bags. I hear your slow, quick, quick hum, the leaf of your waking hand fall in mine, your voice on the phone before you left, anger is a marriage, you said, silence buried inside my laughter, the will to carry a blossom against the tide of wind.
Fantastic. Is that done? Is that it? Well done, Emily.
Who is that? Oh, Max. Thank you, Max.
Brilliant. Thanks, Emily.
Biggest fan. Okay.
Thank you, Emily.
Brilliant.
And next on the open mic is Agustina.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I actually wrote this one around the time when I got my first tattoo. And since I've written this, I've actually gone on to get four more. And I'm thinking about about my fifth one. So I think it's the main thing on my mind right now. So I'll go ahead and read this poem once more. Pigments, injected figments of my imagination, a commitment, a symbolic decision, body modification. Yes, it is a permanent marking. Poking, buzzing, and exploring a certain type of freedom, asserting that once this is done, it is done. Needles, neatness needed, speechless I was instead. Needless to say, that day I felt like it was the first time in my entire life that I owned me. If only you could know how lonely it is to be full of ideas of what you want to do with your body, but being suffocated all your life by what will the people say? Many chances never taken, several places never explored, intense feelings never felt, fantasies never fulfilled. Is it permissible? Unholy? Low-key, yes, you have to stay low-key. No mind for lectures and ceremonies. 9 months to form in a womb, a childhood full of gloom, teen years groomed by people who thought they owned me. Yes, they did me dirty, filled me with dirty ideas and obsessions, resuming, I have many confessions of. Strangers assuming, having no choice but to live with oppressors and aggressors of. Repressions, having to use my discretion. Adopting different personalities, navigating my way around various mentalities, always changing localities, liberties, practicalities, originality, what's that? Costumes in which I lived in just so I could fit in, be there, but just invisible enough to blend in. Individuality. Don't you ever express it around oppressors, because straight up, because of a breakup between two consenting adults that I had no say in being born to. Implications of messy foundations and relationships. Inspiration. This ex-prisoner of censorship, with loads of pages constantly falling out of her book of life, only wanted to keep some of them together. It was a pleasure, tickled like a feather, trying very hard to leave marks on leather. A paperclip, yes, a paperclip, to keep it together on my body. My responsibility. The only one that I have for the rest of my life that is never going to leave me on my skin. Do you see my grin? Full of sin, they'd say, but inside my soul's library, I know this was a win in the direction of actuality. And I tell you now, it took one small tattoo to make that incredible discovery that actually, factually, I own me. So that tattoo, the first one, was actually just a paperclip right here. And I've gone on to get more, and we'll continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Agustina. So next, oh, just a reminder as well, if you want to go on the open mic, just type your name and open mic into the chat box and you'll go on the list. So next on our open mic is Catherine Ronan.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for all that lovely sea fest tonight. I felt like I have to go to Seaside this week, definitely. I'm on my way. Fantastic. My poem is called You Are. You are the river flowing through me. You are the rock steps across. You are the red kites above me. You are the I am not lost. You are the never leave me. You are the never why. You are the never question. You are the reason I try. You are the calm in my purple chaos. Forgive me again. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Ben.
No worries. And next on the open mic is Michelle DeLay.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks for the words again, guys. It is not your work. It is not your art. It is your play without a game, subtle touch and depth of heart. It is your human, it's you, that finds its way out weeps thick paste, found on pavements, blaze it in any direction. The twist of your torso cast in it, unbecoming black. In the dance of day, you're the lead in love, bleeding out for your follow. Dancing in bells and rings round you, or lay on a spinning plate you point to. Peeking between balustrades, my heart magnets to my sternum, almost cracks it slow and softly as Earth's quest to press the edge of sky, still forever and at once a ridge. It feels like devastation. It feels like phantom heartbreak when I see what you have delicately made. Splitting huge capsules of blue dust and teeth white oil, you don't even watch it fall. You are already scratching a new post, and I am again left for dead for beauty. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Michelle. And next on the open mic is Mags Creedon. You might need to hit your unmute button, Mags.
Okay, you know me, Ben, I kind of do improv songs. I've been writing an improv song, just built around revolutions, and, you know, we were doing it a little bit too blue. So I wrote a little personal revolution song, and then I built it into little revolutions to do with the sea. Okay, so hopefully I'll get away with it. But I love challenging. Okay, can you hear that? If I can read it now. Tempo plastico. Can you hear that? Okay.
Yeah.
Tempo plastico. And we're rocking in an ocean on a tiny boat. Each crest sprays its foam upon each high and low. And the seas cling to the planets, and on we go. And as the lakes run dry, they tell us that soon the seas will slowly swell, and we revolve within the spirals of a little seashell, navigating secret oceans within ourselves. Each day and night the earth spins on itself, horizons disappear behind their darkened shells. Spinning seasons, we ellipsis on and slowly melt. Then we rebuild this little earth to slowly spin itself again. It be tango. Every day a little revolution as I revolve around the sun. Will I secede and keep a part of me, or surrender to everyone? When your heroes have those feet of clay, and sometimes you find that you're undone. An army of one, your battle has begun. Start your own revolution. Do I have the right to fight? They call that juice at Balaam. Well, I did not consent for you to steal my joy from me. I will lie fighting. They call that juice in Balaam. There'll be no prisoners, no bloodshed, just a tragic look from me. Every day a little revolution as I revolve around the sun. Will I secede, keep a part of me, or surrender to everyone? My tempo plastico. We are rocking in our ocean in a little boat, and the crest sprays its foam upon our highs and lows. The seas cling to the planet, and on we go. And as the lakes run dry, they tell us that soon the ocean starts to swell, and we revolve within our spirals of our own seashells, the navigating secret oceans within ourselves. Each day and night the earth spins on itself. Horizons disappear behind the darkened shell. Spinning seasons, we ellipse around the sun and slowly melt. Then we rebuild, and the earth will start to spin again itself. Tempo plus plastical. We are rocking to our ocean in a tiny boat, and the crisp space foam upon our highs and lows. The seas cling to the planet, and on we go. Is that enough revolutions, you know?
Oh, wow, Max, that was amazing.
Thanks.
On we go.
On we go, baby. Keep on spinning.
Well done.
Brilliant. Thanks, Max. It feels less virtual when we have you doing your...
I'm always chancing my arm.
Okay, so next on the open mic is Donna McCartan. Okay. I think Donna might be away, so we might come back to him and go with John Ryan.
Hang on, I may be back.
Donna's here.
I may be back. Just give me a second. Can you still hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Perfect. Firstly, just to say that on behalf of the Cork Harbour Festival, it is just wonderful to be associated with O'Vale. It is wonderful to hear the poems from good friends and from our new friends this evening, the poems of the sea. And I have a small contribution, a smaller piece of a bigger piece that is yet to be finished, but it's just titled for now, Waiting. Upturned, the curraghs, their bows full of dark emptiness, stand forlorn. Lear's lonesome ghosts await. Unused, hands that have hewn and hauled, heaved and hoisted, formed and built, degraded stumps. Untrammeled, hands that harness earth and air and fire and water, gossoons tinkering with elemental force, devise maps to navigate them, plot routes to subjugate them, issue edicts to enslave them, praise pious toil, gouge profit from them. Unseen, the triumphal tip-tap of investment keys. Unclean, the first friend, this human touch, this healing hand, senseless caress, the caring void. Upturned, the curragh's weight, the hands that will turn over to the light, to the heart, to the sea. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. That was a really good reading. So next on the open mic is John Ryan.
Hello, Benjamin. Thank you.
Hi, John. Hi, everybody.
I'm going to do what I often threaten to do. I'm going to do one of my cat poems. So this one goes like this. You look at me with ponderous eyes. You consider my gait and stance and demeanor. Silently, you capture my attention. You are cleverly set. You control your breath. You can pick at my weakness and make me doubt. What have I recalled accurately, and what might I have forgot? I'm usually not clear enough or focused. Should I not fill up my duties and put things right? Right now, I am not translating all you are communicating. I am only vaguely in tune with the mild, quiet murmurings that escapes in your vocalisms. You have mastered your subject. You know me so well. On your face are the patented lines of intrigue. The most amazing head nods now gently. The viceregal nose penetrates the heart. Your ears hear all that is within sonar range. Your hair is impeccable. You bring in an intensity to the moment, whether I wish it or not. So I will be the one to blink. This is no surprise to you, I think. I begin to stammer an explanation, but you just turn, leave the room, and then you shake your tail. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, John. And next on the open mic is Kieran McCartan.
It's Kieran. All the hair, Kieran. Lots and lots of hair.
Luscious curls.
Thanks a lot, Ben. And thanks a lot to everybody for the words. I'm just going to read a short passage from the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass. That Black Lives Matter protest today, and I was added on Friday as well. I just think it's a pretty sorry state of affairs that such simple language like Black Lives Matter need to be told to people in the 20th century. This book was published 175 years ago. I think it's a sorry state of affairs that such simple language like Black Lives Matter need to be told to people in the 20th century. This book was published 175 years ago. Seems to be a bit of a delay there. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, yeah.
Sweet. Okay, cool. So this is the start of chapter 6, and Frederick Douglass has just, he has a new master now. He had a previous master, Colonel Lloyd, and now he has a new master, and he's just speaking about that. And he speaks a little bit about his resolve to educate himself. And I think education is a really powerful tool at this time in our world. She was entirely unlike any other white woman I have ever seen. I could not approach her as I was accustomed to approach other white ladies. My early instruction was all out of place. The crouching servility, usually so acceptable a quality in a slave, did not answer when manifested towards her. Her favor was not gained by it. She seemed to be disturbed by it. She did not deem it impudent or unmannerly for a slave to look her in the face. The meanest slave was put fully at ease in her presence, and none left without feeling better for having seen her. Her face was made of heavenly smiles and her voice of tranquil music. But alas, this kind heart had but a short time to remain such. The fatal poison of irresponsible was already in her hands and soon commenced its infernal work. That cheerful eye, under the influence of slavery, soon became red with rage. That voice made all of sweet accord change to one of harsh and horrid discord, and that angelic face gave place to that of a demon. Very soon after I went to live with Mr. and Mrs. Auld, she very kindly commenced to teach me the ABC, and I learned this. She assisted me in learning to spell words of 3 or 4 letters. Just at this point of my progress, Mr. Auld found out what was going on and at once forbade Miss Auld to instruct me further, telling her, among other things, that it was unlawful as well as unsafe to teach a slave to read. To use his own words further, he said, "If you give a nigger an inch, he will take an ell. A nigger should know nothing but to obey his master, to do as he is told to do. Learning would spoil the best nigger in the world. Now," said he, "if you teach that nigger, speaking of myself, how to read, there would be no keeping him. It would be forever unfit for him to be a slave. He would at once become unmanageable and of no value to his master. As to himself, it could do him no good, but a great deal of harm. It would make him discontented and unhappy." These words sank deep into my heart, stirred up sentiments within that lay slumbering, and called into existence an entirely new train of thought. It was a new and special revelation explaining dark and mysterious things with which my youthful understanding had struggled, but struggled in vain. I now understood what had been to me the most perplexing difficulty, to wit, the white man's power to enslave the black man. It was a grand achievement, and I prized it highly. For that moment, I understood the pathway from slavery to freedom. It was just what I wanted, and I got it at a time when I least expected it. Whilst I was saddened by the thought of losing the aid of my kindly mistress, I was gladdened by the invaluable instruction which, by the merest accident, I had gained from my master. Though conscious of the difficulty of learning without a teacher, I set out with high hope and a fixed purpose, at whatever cost of trouble, to learn to read. Thank you.
Thank you, Huron. And just as a heads up, we have 3 left on the open mic. Cathal Holden, John Tynan, and Mo O'Connor. And the first of those is Cathal Holden.
Hey there, guys. How are you? So I'd say it was back in the one of our last physical ovals. I was reading from a short story I wrote last year called Bird Boy. And I had the intention of getting through it part by part, and that could take a year, it could take 2. So nothing brand new at the moment. I'm going to pick up where I left off. So Alexander, who is a young fellow who lives in war zone, is growing wings. That's where we were. It was getting colder, and Xenos made a hole in his winter jacket, and I gave him my one, because the feathers were keeping me warm by then. That was when everybody knew that I was growing wings. The other kids laughed at me and called me Bird Boy, but Xenos and Alia kept on calling me Alexander, and that made it okay. Some of the adults looked at each other strangely, and I knew that they were talking about me, and I wished I knew what they were saying. I hurt myself, jumping off the top of the kiln, trying to fly, and they gave Xenos and Alia packets for me to eat when I couldn't go out looking for food. I read through Q all the way to S in the Q to T book in 10 days. Then I got pneumonia and lost so much weight that I thought I was going to die. Everyone started calling me Alexander again, one of the adults came and gave me some medicine and told me that it was rare, but that I was a rarity. I got better after that. By springtime, my entire chest and back were covered in brown mottled feathers, and I had two wings growing out of my back, feathers that went up past my fingers, and I was very proud of them. I could glide a short ways if I jumped from a height, and I practiced my wing strokes whenever I remembered. We used to eat pigeons and other birds we caught in their roosts while they were asleep, but I stopped, because it felt like I was eating a part of myself, and I couldn't pull the feathers off them, even if they were already dead. Alia dared me to jump off the mosque, and I did it. I climbed the minaret, and at the top, I pretended to be the muadzin, with my voice and my nose up between my eyes. And instead of the adhan, I sang something obscene about the baker's wife. It was so high up. It was high up for me then, I mean. I couldn't fly yet. I threw myself off the top, and I flew. My ears filled up with wind, and my eyes with water, and I flew, all the way to the ground in a nearly straight line, and it was like dreaming of flying, except that my eyes stung. I learned fast after that. One of the men made me a pair of goggles out of two glass bottles, and I was throwing myself off the minaret every morning until one of the falling stars hit the mosque and destroyed it, even though it was earthquake-proof and 1,000 years old. I twirled and rolled in the air like a swallow, and soon I could beat my wings and climb into the sky, higher than the minaret used to be. I was full of me, full of the happiness of two new wings, full of the miracle of flying. Around then, Brother Zenos stopped meeting my eyes. My wings were useful. I flew and I caught birds for the others, even if I didn't eat them. I could see far distances across the city, and I could watch the sunrise before anybody else if I wanted to. I could even leave. My wings carried me for miles over the plains and mountains, the places where the sun didn't fall and the stars stayed up in the sky. I came home with as many dates as I could carry. Slowly, I started to spend more time away from the city where the sky fell. One of these times, flew too far to return home when I was tired. I looked in the mountains for water, for a stream or a pool. Eventually, I came across the light of a fire in a little valley, and so I landed and walked right up to the people there, my wings folded up. They all saw. They gave me coffee and fed me. It was the first meat I had had in weeks. They did not say a word to me or amongst themselves all night, but in the morning, one of them came and woke me and showed me the dark knobs of feathers growing under her skin. She was older than me, but she held me to her chest and stretched out the spread of my wings and touched the feathers. Hers were blue. I'll leave it there, guys. We'll pick it up the next time. Cheers.
Thank you, Cahill. And next to the open mic is John Tynan.
Okay, I'll shout. Even though I'm up full volume practically, so anyhow. This is about a dawn row on a curragh. The first embracing stroke, or enters into holy matrimony, betrothed water swirls its mystic cloak. Now wedded to a love professed, consummate this sacred harmony, she voices psalms of ever with the parting of her ways. And so entranced by crescent sides, as boughs hear solemn waters, gilded by the flame of King of Goldsmiths, the virgin light suffuses, the dark dispatched as curragh crests the rising day, vessel for a man's commune with nature. The blessed ceremony, the coupling, embark on timeless journey. Thank you. I hope you all got that, or some of it anyway.
So next we have Susanna.
From Joy Arjo. It's called For Alva Benson and For Those Who Have Learned to Speak. And the ground spoke when she was born. Her mother heard it. In a bio, she answered, as she squatted down against the earth to give birth. It was now when it happened, now giving birth to itself again and again between the legs of women. Or maybe it was the Indian hospital in Gallup. The ground still spoke beneath mortar and concrete. She strained against the metal stirrups and tied her hands down because she still spoke with them when they muffled her screams. But her body went on talking, and a child was born into their hands, and the child learned to speak both voices. She grew up talking in Navajo, in English, and watched the earth around her shift and change, with the people in the towns and in the cities learning not to hear the ground as it spawns around beneath them. She learned to speak for the ground, the voice coming through her like roots that have long hungered for water. Her own daughter was born, like she had been, in either place or all places, so she could leap into the sound she had always heard, a voice like water, like the gods weaving against sundown in a scarlet light. The child now hears names in her sleep, the change into other names and into others. It is the ground murmuring, and mounts and talons erupts as the harmonic motion of a child turning inside her mother's belly, waiting to be born to begin another time. And we go on, keep giving birth, and watch ourselves die over and over, and the ground spinning beneath us goes on talking. Yeah. So that was from Joy Arjo.
Thank you, Susanna.
He says next time.
Okay, Mo says next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not working. Oh, well, next time we'll figure it out. Okay, so thank you to everyone who read on the open mic. Thank you to Mick DeLapp and Alice Lyons, our guest poets. And well done to Ray Hanrahan for winning the five words. And thank you to Paul. Just a big round of applause. The event is going to cease being live in a minute, but if you want to stay around for mains, just stay in the group.
Virtual mains.
Yeah, mains. Just stay online and you'll be in mains. No more walking.